This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by FRP Games, a game store with regular overstock discounts of up to 90% off. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Vorpal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom, comics, advice, D&D. RPGs. Finding it's easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
This is Luke Johnson, knife writer who's worked with Wizards of the Coast, White Wolf, Goodman Games, and you're listening to The Tome! Woo!
Welcome to The Tome, episode 135. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, I've gathered two adventurous souls who are going to guide me through an abyssal sea of fire and help me to navigate the heavenly color strands of the astral sea in a new review format looking at Plane Below and Plane Above. First, let's see who's deigned to join me in this adventure. I see that we've been joined by longtime contributor Jeffrey D. Wynn. Welcome back, sir.
It's great to be back, sir.
And secondly, we have the long-awaited return of Matt James, who, according to the number of times appearing on this show, is the greatest of all James Brothers.
Yay!
Well, don't sound so excited.
No. Hey, Jeff, thanks again for having me back on. Seriously, I love The Tome Show, and I'm as much of a fan as I am anything else.
Well, I wasn't trying to bait you for
I'm going to assume you were talking to me, so I will say you're welcome.
There you go.
I will say Jeff with a J, fa-fa.
Okay. We're gonna fight this all night, aren't we, Jeff?
I hope so. It'll be more entertaining that way.
Well, good. We don't want to have any lack of entertainment tonight. It has been a while since I've checked in on some D&D news, so let's do a quick sort of check-in and see what's going on in the world of Dungeons & Dragons. The first thing I wanted to mention is that there's been a whole slew of new game designers that have recently been released from employment over at Wizards of the Coast. Including some names that you might recognize. Oftentimes, when these things happen, there's one or two names that you recognize from the covers of books or whatever, but most people are behind-the-scenes people. My biggest surprise on the list this time around was Andy Collins, who, as I understand, had a lot to do with the 4th edition mechanics, and a lot of that was designed sort of under his administration. Were there any names on the list that surprised you guys?
Andy was a huge surprise, and I'll tell you why. There's a couple projects going on at WotC that I'm in on, and I had just spoken to Andy about a week or two prior to this announcement, so for me it was a massive surprise. I didn't see that coming. But on the same hand, I don't know what their line of thinking is, and I'm not even going to begin to dissect their business model, but I'm sure that they're going to take care of Andy, and I hope that Andy finds gainful employment, and I truly wish him all the best.
Yeah, and I haven't talked to anybody at WotC at this point about anything. I know that there was some rumor running around that maybe Andy actually had other employment, and so he wasn't so much fired as he was wanting to go somewhere else for something else, but that's all rumor and conjecture anyway, so.
Right, and I've talked to a couple people, and again, I'm not a big fan of churning the rumor mill, but I heard the same thing. So I wish Andy all the best.
Absolutely,
and hopefully he'll land on his feet.
Yeah, and I know that some of the other people that were let go in the last 6 months or so have been working regularly for WotC doing freelance work. They just haven't been working there full time. So their work is still
Correct.
Appearing in the products that you like. In related news, I also had recently caught up with the fact that there are two big promotions that happened at Wizards of the Coast. James Wyatt and Mike Merles have been promoted to positions of even greater power in the company. So while I'm sad to see some of the designers that I know and trust leaving, it's good to see James Wyatt and Mike Merles, who are two great guys who have done really solid work on D&D, sort of moving up the ladder. And I really hope that means that the quality of the company can maintain really high standards, even though they're losing some of their really good designers.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, yeah, Mike Merles, that guy is a genius. If anyone ever gets the chance to pick his brain for 5 or 10 minutes about game design, I highly recommend it. He's a great guy. He's really personal. You can walk right up to him and talk to him.
Yeah.
And James Wyatt as well is great.
Yeah. I know I've talked to both of the gentlemen on a few occasions, either for the show or for other things. And they've both been very personable, very easy to talk to, more than willing to sit down and chat with me as a member of the quote press, or, you know, just chat about D&D in general and talk about, you know, gaming and that kind of stuff. And they seem to be really good guys. I know Mr. Wynn over here is a big fan of James Wyatt.
Well, I've had the opportunity to interview him twice, and he's been just great both times. And I look forward to talking to him again in the future. If he's listening, please come on the show and talk to me.
Very good. And speaking of Jeffrey Wynn over here, why don't you tell us about the regional or local expert on the D&D Encounters program? Tell us about some interesting news coming out of that program recently.
Well, if you're not familiar with D&D Encounters, it's a weekly Wednesday night event, sort of the D&D equivalent of Friday Night Magic, I guess. It's pretty much a 2-hour after school, after work event where you just play one encounter of D&D, and over a series of sessions, it forms a continuous campaign or a season. We're just finishing up with the Undermountain campaign. Things are really getting intense, and I have a feeling it's going to be a very exciting and climactic finish. But dropping in, I believe, June 9th is going to be the next season of D&D Encounters, D&D Encounters Dark Sun, where if you play that, you'll be able to play 4th edition Dark Sun before the Dark Sun books hit shelves. If you have a store in your area that's participating, they'll be getting a kit with a pre-written adventure, pre-made Dark Sun characters, and you'll be able to go there and play Dark Sun, basically, before anybody else can.
Very cool. Any other D&D news in general before I go into some, you know, news about me and what have you?
The website loremaster.org, which I will shamefully plug, is going under some changes. I welcome everyone to come visit that site. I'm going to be also putting up links directly to Jeff's work at the Tome Show, as well as his talented staff. Yeah, so come check it out. I don't know what else to say. It'll make you smarter, stronger, faster, more attractive, and it does good things for you.
It is a fantastic site and has a lot of stuff going on for it. All right, some stuff that I've been doing lately that people can check out is I have been writing my fingers to the bone, meaning I've got a couple of articles out there. Two new reviews have been published on Fistful of Comics and Games, or at least will be published by the time this hits the airwaves. I reviewed the latest two Drizzt novels, The Pirate King and The Ghost King, one of which was probably my favorite Drizzt novel of all time, and the other of which was probably my least favorite Drizzt novel of all time. If you want to try and figure out which is which, you have to check out the reviews, and they are linked in the show notes. I've also had my second article published at the At Will blog. The first article gives advice on making a character background that embraces archetypes, and I wrote about a ranger that was raised in the wilderness. The new one gives advice on breaking archetypes, where I write a background for an artificer who thinks she's a cleric. You can find links to that in the show notes as well. All right. Besides that, the only other news I can think of is that about the time that this is coming out, Player's Strategy Guide has been out for just a little bit now for this month. And next month you can be looking for Monster Manual 3 and the Player's Handbook Races Tiefling book. Anything else I'm missing? All right, then let's move in. In this episode, we're going to take a little bit of a different approach than usual when we do a tome product review. Typically, we go chapter by chapter and discuss the things inside the book and discuss what we like and don't like. This time, we're going to take a less comprehensive approach to what's in the book, but we will briefly sort of discuss what's there. We're going to talk about what we liked, what we didn't like in a shorter context. And then we're going to give an example of how we've been inspired to possibly use the book in the future. And I'm thinking that I'm excited to see if this is going to give us, you know, the heart of what a lot of people look for in reviews, but give us a different style or a different type of engaging content that might be interesting to people to hear as well. And maybe will allow us to get in more than one review in an episode. We'll see how it goes. If you like it, don't like it, or think it's good for only some kinds of products, make sure to let me know. You can swing by the forums at vorpalnetwork.com and give me your feedback. All right. We're going to start off by looking at Plane Below, Secrets of the Elemental Chaos, since it came out first. This book is by Ari Marmel, Bruce Cordell, and Luke Johnson. It is designed to give a DM ideas, locations, and mechanics to make it easier to run a game in the Elemental Chaos, including the Abyss. Inside, you find inspiration and mechanics to represent the laws, or lack thereof, in this plane of chaos. Elemental travel devices, rules for modifying the environment by force of will, campaign and adventure ideas, as well as a few artifacts and methods of transportation, make up the bulk of the first section. Next, you find relatively extensive looks at the people of the Elemental Chaos, including Archons, Djinns, Ifrits, Genasi, Giants and Titans, Gith Zerai, Slods, and others. Then you're given a series of locations in the plane that are detailed to give your DM inspiration on how to use these places in his game. And the book also includes one chapter that's dedicated just to the Abyss, which acts as sort of a book within a book. It has all of the things that I mentioned before, but just summed up in one chapter for the Abyss. And lastly, the book gives you new creatures and monsters, including unique NPCs and legendary creatures. All right. That's the quick summary version that normally would have taken us the entire episode. Let's get into what we liked. What do we like about this book? Mr. James, go first.
Wow. All right. Okay, first off, for all of those fluff lovers out there, and I count myself amongst them, there's been a lot of talk since 4th edition has come out about how it's all mechanics, this, that, and the other. I'm telling you right now, the two books that you need to pick up if you're a DM or you're a person that's designing adventures in these marvelous places is The Plane Below and The Plane Above. I'm not selling the book to you. You can get it if you want, or you can borrow mine. I don't care. But if you are worried about fluff, you need to get these books. Now, The Plane Below, as Jeff pointed out, is all about the Elemental Chaos. The Elemental Chaos is a new location, so to speak, in the cosmos of Dungeons & Dragons. So if you don't know anything about it, come pick this book up. You're going to find a lot of really nasty things in there to throw at your players. Jeff jumped on a couple of those, such as planar effects that will affect movement or certain spell types or this, that, and the other. It goes over the history of the Elemental Chaos along with the big bad guys that are there. And it gets down to the nitty-gritty as far as if you need specific things to add to your campaign, it will have it detailed in here. Specifically, if you turn to Chapter 4, which is Into the Abyss, you're going to find all sorts of really great campaign arcs, specifically for the Paragon and Epic tier, that'll help you challenge your players if you want to get things outside of the normal. There's nothing like dropping your players into the Elemental Chaos to kind of get them sweating a little bit. Yeah. Other than that, it's the same kind of theme all throughout. So I highly recommend you pick it up if you're looking for new ideas.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mentioned that I really enjoyed in the book was some of these new mechanics for manipulating the environment. You know, the idea that you can, by sheer force of will, you can start flinging bits of the terrain at your enemies, you know, because that's the kind of way they've described the Elemental Chaos in the past is that, you know, people that are strong of will can, you know, actually manipulate it and change the environment, change the terrain, build their own little kingdoms or whatever with the, you know, the force of their mind. And they give you actual mechanics and rules for that, which is something that typically hasn't always been done when describing this kind of environment. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, there's an actual at-will power in there that you can give one of your players if they meet the requirements. And as long as they're in the Elemental Chaos, they can use this at-will power.
Yeah. So, Mr. Wynn, what did you like?
I just want to point out, first of all, that even though the Elemental Chaos is technically a new place in the D&D cosmos, it's really just a mishmash of a lot of planes from previous editions, like the Elemental Planes and Limbo, and of course the Abyss. But like Matt said, I mean this is just looks like a fun place to just drop your players and watch them squirm around trying to get out, hopping from one misadventure to another place. I mean, there's just I think most people who pick up this book will go straight to the Abyss. I prefer reading all about the elementals, the genies, and I love the slot. There's an excellent section in here on a skill challenge involving trying to reason with a slot. Mm-hmm. And it's very fun to read and gives a lot of insight on how to run interactions with these very sort of absurd but also very dangerous creatures.
Yeah, and I liked what you talked about with the skill challenges. That was one of my other notes. Is one of the things I really liked is that some of the skill challenges presented in here I thought were really good and really well presented and brought some interesting sort of ideas into running a skill challenge in that have that this theme, right, of the Elemental Chaos. And I really liked the one that you mentioned, negotiating with a slod. Some of the other skill challenges, not to my style of design, but – you know, I'd say about 50-50. Some of them were really great for inspiration.
With skill.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I was going to say with skill challenges, it's hit or miss. I think it's an interesting part of the new edition that either it's really fun for the players or it's really terrible. But I hope they're able to take the skill challenges that are presented in here, because I got the same feeling that you did, that some of them were great, a couple of them, but the good thing is you can take those and you can adapt them, change them for whatever you want to use for your players.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only other thing that I want to mention that I really liked out of this that we haven't already talked about is that I'm a sucker for hazards and environmental effects, and there's a whole slew more of those presented in this book. So anytime I can get more of that kind of stuff, you know, for my tool chest, then I'm all in favor of that. All right. Anything else that we like about the book? Or shall we move along to what we were maybe a little bit disappointed about? Okay, let's go ahead and do that. Let's talk about what we maybe didn't like as much about this book. What were some things that we maybe, you know, if we were in charge of D&D, what would we have changed? What would we have done differently?
I would definitely have put in more of the Elemental Lords. I was very disappointed that the back of the book did not really have that many personalities from previous editions. I was a big fan of Imix and Ogremok and Cryonax. In fact, Cryonax, the Lord of Evil Cold Creatures, is the villain of my campaign right now. And I mean, usually the back of the book is where they put, like, you know, the very powerful campaign enemies from previous editions. And there's like nobody in here that I recognize except for like Ekok, Lord of Smoke, and Igoril, who's Lord of the Slods. So I thought that was kind of lacking.
Sure. Yeah, and I agree, you know, and I know they're limited somewhat on you know, they only have so many pages and they have to figure out what to put in and what not to put in. My sort of impression was I would have rather they not done sort of the halfway attempt on the Abyss and just give it its own book, separate from this one. You know, just mention, yes, it's here, and there's another book coming out. Look for it.
Yeah, I agree.
And just focus on the elemental stuff. I think that would have been really cool, because what they have is really well done. I just wanted more. You know, more specific people, more
space for elementals is always good.
Yeah, that's basically my one sort of critique of the book, is that I wanted more of the elemental stuff. And, you know, I could have gotten that if they'd have done the Abyss in its own book. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, I think both of you have a great critique there, and I'd like to thank you for giving me some great ideas for some future D&D articles. So hopefully,
Cryo Nats.
Look at the, see if it went, if and when it comes out, then I can point back to this interview on the Tome Show, and you can say, "Hey, look,"
and you'll link to it, right?
But yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Actually, in the credit part, I'll say I would like to thank the two Jeffs for their suggestion. I agree. I think that the Abyss could have very easily been put into its own book. Again, we'll have to see if there can get some future support through DDI articles. And my one critique, believe it or not, I mean, I have many critiques, but the one thing I would have loved to have seen more of that is lacking in this book is maps. The James brothers are pretty big on maps. My brother being really huge, he goes into psycho mode when it comes to maps, especially for the Forgotten Realms, to make sure everything is good and ready. But as I'm looking through, I mean, you'll notice there's really no maps. And I grew up, you know, as a kid, daydreaming when you look at the map, saying, "Oh, you know," before you really understand everything. And I think maps help put things into perspective. Now, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because it's an odd plane. Maybe that would have been a little bit more difficult. And at the same time, less maps means more fluff. So it's kind of difficult to do. But yeah. Anyways, I would have loved to have seen more maps.
Yeah, and there's a few places you could have squeezed some maps in, right? Like, you know, the City of Brass and, you know, some of the other cities that
right.
they mentioned. I think it could have sort of fit in there. You have a visitor in there,
right?
Mate?
Yeah, I have two chihuahuas. I apologize for that.
Not a problem. All right, so we wanted more maps and more elemental stuff. And I wonder if... I mean, we're going to be getting a Demonomicon coming up soon. I wonder if that couldn't have just as easily been, you know, the Abyss book.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. My older Brian was actually one of the prime contributors to Demonomicon. So with that being said, I don't have any information on it, but I'm going to assume if Brian's involved, there could be some cool maps in there.
That's
but we'll have to see.
And he did promise me via Twitter that would be the episode, that would be the product he would come on and talk about. So,
yes, he would. Yeah, he's very, very proud of that product, and he talks about it all the time. And, of course, I've had to listen to it for the last year because everything's got to be put in written about a year in advance. So I'm looking forward to it. So,
all right, so now we're each going to go ahead and give one thing that this book sort of inspired us with. You know, one way that you might use this book if you were to pick it up. So maybe you could get an idea, you know, of how you might use the book and whether or not it would be useful to you. Does anybody want to go first? Or should I?
You can go first.
All right, I guess I will. I have a rather lengthy sort of spiel that I put together because my inspiration was there were some things and some monsters and stuff that I saw in here that I, you know, I was considering doing some different things, and then I decided to instead focus in on one idea and turn it into an idea for a whole campaign arc. You know how they present in these kinds of books, they present arcs for possible campaigns that you might want to do? Well, I sort of invented my own. Because I wanted to think, well, how could you do an entire campaign actually in the elemental chaos? You know, not just visiting here and there or not just, you know, running into creatures, but actually, you know, at first level, you're in the elemental chaos. And it occurred to me they did give you some places where you could do that. And specifically, I was looking at what they gave us about Githzerai and Genasi, and that sort of started forming this concept in my head, because they have cities or monasteries or whatever within the elemental chaos. And it seemed kind of natural that would be the place that you would start your first level campaign, actually in the city of, you know, the Genasi, which is a serious points of light setting, right? Stepping away from civilization is very, very dangerous in this situation because you're in the elemental chaos. You know, I would start off the heroic tier with a lot of sort of political intrigue within the city. Make it an urban sort of campaign with occasional trips off to the more wild areas or visiting other sort of bastions of civilization. And as the story progresses, the party learns that many of their problems through the campaign have been coming from a group working out of the City of Brass. So in the Paragon tier, the party spends more and more of their time dealing with this group in the City of Brass, eventually routing these forces of chaos, and it slowly becomes apparent that they've been working for this idea that they presented in the book called a free primordial. And free primordials are primordials that didn't die and weren't imprisoned. They're still free. They just sort of keep a low key running throughout the elemental chaos. And this one, this big bad guy, is trying to free the other primordials and resume the Dawn War, where they would be fighting the gods and bring destruction to the planes. I also thought that maybe the party themselves could be sponsored at this point by another powerful denizen who, as they enter Epic Tier, actually turns out to be another free primordial itself, one that feels remorse for having been involved in the Dawn War and is actually actively working against the freedom of the other primordials who don't feel any of that remorse. And then finally in the Epic Tier, with the help of the gods, the party take the fight to the forces of the primordials themselves, perhaps going into various prisons where they defeat the people who are trying to free them, secure the prisons, or even kill a few primordials along the way. When it's all said and done, they have the choice of killing the primordials, redeeming them, or simply trying to restore them to the status quo. In any situation, they have to figure out what to do with the reluctant primordial who was helping them all along. Maybe they can help him get to the Astral Sea, where he can petition to join the side of the gods. But in the end, they have to find a way to free the big bad guy, the big free primordial who's been causing all these problems to begin with. And that was my campaign arc that was inspired by this book. How's that sound?
Sounds like fun.
Besides lengthy, I suppose. All right. Who wants to go next, then? Who else was inspired?
I was inspired. Go for it, Jeff.
No, I was going to say I was going to let you go first.
Take it away, Matt.
All right. I first became inspired with the Elemental Chaos long before, honestly, before this book even came out. I had written a module called Monument of the Ancients with my brother, and at the end, there's kind of a story element that can lead you into the Elemental Chaos. So when the book actually came out and I was looking through it, I'm like, ooh, I find all sorts of fun stuff to do with this. Chief among them is the story behind the Dawn War, which is the war between the primordials and the celestial gods. There's a lot of interoperability between this book and some other source books out there, such as The Underdark. Without getting into it, because we're not talking about The Underdark, I recommend you get it, read up on it. You'll find some good crossover stuff regarding the Elemental Chaos and how The Underdark is formed. Mm-hmm. That being said, the primordials aren't necessarily all evil, which is an interesting kind of spin on things. Just like as the gods, there are evil gods and good gods, there are evil primordials and good primordials. So you can kind of play off of that and the politics of that. Like Jeff suggested, they can either work to slay these primordials or redeem them or help them out. It all depends on the party and the story that you're trying to go. Sulcara, the Crushing Wave primordial, brings up some great fluff if you kind of want to bring that in there. Whether she's going to be an ally or an adversary. And let me just say, if your party is fighting primordials, they better be end game. These guys are nasty, and they're nasty for a reason. But there's so many plot seeds that are peppered all throughout this book that you can kind of toss in. And, I love it. There's actually a whole section on primordial encounters. So, I'd say go for it.
Very cool. So we both seem to be inspired by the concept of primordials, and although there's other areas where I was inspired as well, let's see what Mr. Wynn over here came up with.
As I mentioned, I really love elementals, so I immediately latched on to Ekok, the smoldering duke. He's kind of the elemental lord of smoke, and he was actually like a name that was dropped in Planescape like many, many eons ago.
Yay, Planescape.
So, yay, Planescape. So I wasn't My idea sort of tied him actually to the material plane. It has nothing to do with the elemental chaos, ironically.
That's perfect.
I've got this city that was already a part of my campaign world called Krogdon, the City of Smoke, which was this very industrial age city that had factories that constantly belched smoke into the air. And so it was like eternally dark and creepy and stuff. And it was anachronistic compared to the rest of the campaign setting. No other city or place in the setting has factories or, you know, this kind of steampunky atmosphere. So when I saw Ekok, I kind of wanted to tie him to that city somehow. Like maybe he's responsible somehow. I mean, like maybe he's invested in this city. Maybe he's pulling the strings there. It's sort of a half-baked idea, like, you know, most of my ideas. But I really want to, yeah, just tie him to this city that's in my campaign world and just see where that goes.
Yeah, of all the unique sort of NPC or unique creatures that were presented in this book, he was the one that seemed the most evocative to me. If nothing else, the picture of him, the image of him, made me think, ooh, that looks like somebody that I would like to use.
He's a very snappy dresser. I like his coat.
Well, good. All right, so there's things we liked about the book, things we didn't like about the book, and some ways that it inspired us. Next, we're going to do the same sort of look at the plane above, the Astral Sea. But first, I want to mention the fine folks at FRP Games. FRP is a great game store with an easy-to-use website where you can get your new D&D books, dice, maps, etc. They offer big discounts. I know I just recently bought some new D&D minis at 40% off. But that's not my pick for this episode. My pick this time around is the killer planar combination of not just Plane Below and Plane Above, but also Manual of the Planes. These three big books give you more inspiration and information about running games across the planes than you can shake a stick at. Or a magical rod, anyway. And each of them is available at FRP Games for about $24. That's $6 off the normal price for each book. Check out the show notes for links to these products and other things from FRP Games, where you can go search around and find other gaming material you might need. Be sure to go through our website so they know we sent you, and that their support of the Tome Show is appreciated.
FRP Games is an online retailer specializing in all aspects of your tabletop gaming needs. Whether it's RPGs, dice, war games, or computer games, FRP Games has a wide selection of products. They offer overstock items where you can pick up all kinds of gaming gear ranging from 30% off all the way up to 90% off the retail price. Through our website, you'll be directed to their weekly new products, eBay auctions, or you can even buy your special gaming someone a gift certificate. FRP Games is an authorized Wizards of the Coast retailer and for 10 years has been committed to providing each customer with the highest standard of customer service possible. Visit our website for instant access to FRP Games inventory of thousands of unique gaming items.
It is now time to jump into our next book on the list. That is Plane Above, Secrets of the Astral Sea. This book has similar goals to the plane below, but naturally explores the upper planes and dominions of the gods instead of the chaos of the elemental realms. This book is written by Rob Hiensu, and I was surprised that it wasn't just sort of a rehash of the exact same format of Plane Below. It was it had some similarities, but there were some different setups as well. Probably because there were different leads sort of working on the product. Although there were more similarities than differences, it just felt a little bit different to me. In Plane Above, you're going to find your chapter on adventuring in the Astral Sea, campaign ideas, discussion of how the Astral Sea works, travel information, and hazards. There's also a new story about how the Astral Sea works that introduces a concept that didn't exist in the older editions called the Lattice of Heaven. Then it goes into information on locations of the Astral Sea, godly dominions primarily. Races get a decent run through, including Coatls, Githyanki, Maruts, and the Quam. Then it jumps into Shattered Dominions, which is a series of locations generally scarier than the godly domains that include, you know, Hell and Prison Dominions and other places like that. And then lastly, the book gives you an array of new monsters, including new monster themes for Exalted of Kord and Exalted of Arathis. All right, there's my fast summary of what's in the book. Let's start this time with Jeffrey Wynn. What did you like?
Jeff, I have to say, there was not much in this book that I liked. So maybe I should say more in the next section on what I didn't like. Pass this over to Matt.
Matt, what did you like?
Oh, man. Yeah, I actually like the book, but I am a huge, huge nerd slash geek for all things extra planar. So when it came to this, when I opened it up, and I mean, in the first chapter, it's talking about astral adventuring. First thing that came to mind is my all-time favorite, I mean, right up there with the Forgotten Realms, is Spelljammer, along with Planescape. But yeah, for those who are looking to get Spelljammers back in, they don't have specific rules per se. I mean, they have some ships in there, several astral ships. But yeah, I'm probably going to try to pitch a whole big thing on Spelljammers. So anyways, this opened a flood of ideas for me, so I can only imagine what it might do for a DM at home. Again, I also like the story of the gods, so to speak. So as they go into the various different areas, they don't go into specifics necessarily on the gods themselves. It's more of their locations. So if you want to find out more information on that, I found that to be amazingly abundant as far as to spark ideas. I think some of the monsters in the Astral Denizen area could have used a little bit more. I could save that for my critique section. But, yeah, just like the plane below, I think this one, the plane above, spawned all sorts of awesome ideas, at least for me. And, you know, hopefully it'll do that for some others as well.
Cool. And some of the things I really liked, I found that the campaign arc section of this book was actually particularly good. I liked it more than I did the same section for the plane below, actually. I thought these campaign arcs were much more interesting to me. I also really liked some of the ideas they had for Dominion ships. The idea that, you know, you not only have a flying ship floating around in the Astral Sea, but you've been, you know, blessed by the gods, and you have a special Dominion ship that does, you know, that's connected to that Dominion of that god, and it has special abilities and powers because of that. Beyond that, I liked some of the new races and some of the ideas that came along with those, like the Quam. This idea that there's this race out there who's constantly hunting for little pieces and shards of their dead god, who is all over creation, and they might be out there ruthlessly slaughtering people because that seems random, but it's because the people they're killing have little bits of that god in them that they're trying to get out, so maybe they can reconstitute and bring their god back. I thought that was kind of a cool concept. And I also thought it was a really good idea to have the exalted monster templates. You know, the idea that, you know, if you are a follower, I really liked the template concept for monsters that they presented back in DMG2, and I'm glad to see some more of those coming out. You know, my only wish there is that, you know, I wanted more of them besides just the two that we got. All right, so that's what we liked. I did feel like there were maybe some disappointments here as well, though, so let's let Jeff start on that. Jeffrey Wynn?
Oh, boy.
What were you disappointed with in the book?
yes. How to make this concise? I want to say I'm also a big plane nerd. I absolutely love the planes. And I guess what I was disappointed with was this book had a lot of stuff in it that I do like and I am interested in. Just each thing there was not enough of, or not enough detail, or things got reinvented in ways that I was not a fan of. I mean, Matt mentioned that it's kind of Spelljammery, it's also kind of Planescape-y, but it's not really either of those. It's kind of I just felt like it presented this very fantastic place in kind of a dull kind, like I didn't feel excited when I was reading it. I didn't feel excited about these places. Because every section is just way too short. as Matt said about playing below, this book could really have benefited from maps. There should really be a map of the Astral Sea. Every one of these divine domains should have its own map. I mean, there's a section on Hell that is way too short. Hell really, like the Abyss, Hell really needs its own book. I think the Qualm are silly. I'm sorry to whoever came up with the Qualm, but I think that a bunch of colorful dwarves trying to collect the shards of their dead god, no matter how microscopically small, is just kind of absurd. I don't like the fact that they got rid of my clockwork inevitables and turned them into these Marits. And I would rather see the Modrons come back than what they have here. So I just feel like everything is just too short, too brief. Give me more. Make me feel excited. Make me feel awed to be exploring these places, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's legitimate. Now the Maruts aren't new. They've been around for a while.
No, they're not new. They were a type of inevitable, I think, in third edition. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I remember them being distinct. I don't remember if they were part of something or not, honestly. Matt, do you remember?
Okay, but they were.
No, I don't remember.
Okay. I know I've read about them before, but I don't remember how far back I'm going. It might be even back in the second edition.
Yeah, they're not new, but they're kind of replacing the inevitables and the Modrons as the lawful beings of the universe.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me that the concept of the inevitables sort of fitting into that same role didn't really even occur to me until you said something. Yeah, I found some of the areas, like you were talking about, also a little bit disappointing. The lack of detail in some areas. You know, the Astral Sea is infinite. There are literally unlimited possible locations they could give detail on. But they didn't even really mention that concept. You know, they never explicitly said, you know, there are millions of places to look at. They sort of said, these are the places you can go. And they give you a handful of dominions, which aren't necessarily the ones that I'm the most interested in using. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I
like all of these dominions, and I would just like to know more about them. Each of them, I would like a book on each of these places.
Or at least a good DDI article, Matt.
Oh yeah! Hey, I'm taking notes as we speak. The only thing that I can mention is Jeff brought it up earlier because of the limit on space. Now, I mean, if you guys, I'll take a picture of it. Maybe you guys can put it up on the Tome Show website. But I have an entire wall of books, and that a good portion of them are all the different books from the different planes from Planescape and Spelljammer and everything throughout the editions. So to fit all that into a 160 page book is kind of rough. But
sure.
I do agree with you guys that this is something that should definitely be expanded upon, possibly through DDI or something like that. The only other thing that I can point possible listeners to, such as DMs and whatnot, is the actual Manual of the Planes, which is more of a broad overview, of which there's a small portion for the Elemental Chaos and the Astral Sea. Hopefully in there, I know for a fact in there that there's some mention broad explanation of how you can kind of get things to work for your own campaign, such as reality rips and different things like that. That's a whole other subject. But I think if you take these two books and combine it with the Manual of Planes, it could give you a bit better kind of grasp. But I'm totally with Jeff in that, there's so much more that could definitely be stuffed into these pages. And, of course, the other Jeff, the Jeff with Jay, where's the maps? I'm all for maps, and hopefully in the future we can see some support for that through either future books or DDI support.
Yeah. I guess my thought was that, you know, I could have used maybe one less dominion and then used those pages to give some general ideas or guidelines on how to create your own dominions. You know, which would have been a nice nod to the fact that there's an infinite number out there, and do what you want with them. I think, you know, there's some really cool things they've done with that kind of stuff in the past. You know, like the mechanics they gave on how to deal with the changeable nature of the plane below. You know, I would have liked to see some of that in this as well, to say, okay, now there's also infinite dominions. Here's how you can sort of go through the steps of creating your own. And I think that would have been really nice to have. So write that article for me.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So let's get into our bits of inspiration here. I went first last time. Who wants to go first this time? All right. Mr. Wynn,
go ahead. That's fine.
Jeff, take it.
I'll be brief. The only thing in this book that I kind of latched onto was the plane of Arashani, because it has this really evocative picture of this golden glowing statue of a primordial, like that towers over mountains, against a backdrop of stars and a night sky. And the suggestion is that this is a primordial that was frozen in this position during the Dawn War. Nobody knows who it is or why it's there, but it's just there. And that to me is it's just, you know, a weird, strange place. It very much reminds me of Planescape. Like it's just this really odd place, and like I wouldn't even like I would just make it a backdrop for some encounter or interaction or scene that's totally unrelated to the statue or the setting itself. I would just have the players go there and just see this in passing, sort of a reminder of, hey, the universe is really old and there's strange things out there. So I really liked this picture.
Cool. And Mr. James, what did you like, or what inspired you? What can you create out of this book?
As I was flipping through it, I kind of honed in on a couple sections, but the one that really kind of caught my attention was Sharanagar, which is kind of like a subdomain, so to speak, of soldiers and warfare. And of course, being a prior service soldier myself, got me all hyped up. I recommend reading that section because it's got this whole kind of sense to it that, warriors call out to Sharanagar, so to speak, like, you know, instead of, oh, we've entered hell, it's like, you know, tonight we'll dine in Sharanagar. I mean, it's the place for warriors. And I recommend, if you're looking for a real brutal kind of awesome story to kind of hit home, a combat heavy or warfare based campaign, Sharanagar is definitely the place to go. They also talk about, you know, Bane in there. They've got the stories between Bane and Grumsh, and Kord, I believe, is in there. Mm-hmm. And it gives a little bit of details on the geography of the area and whatnot, and some locations. But there is an awesome picture in there if you're one for photographs and artwork. It kind of shows a picture of what I think would be Sharanagar under an assault, so to speak. But anyways, that stood out to me. I recommend it. Check it out.
Well, and if nothing else, it sounds like this is a location that could actually – the details on it could be useful to a player as much as a DM. You know, you're making a warrior PC, and having this little bit about Sharanagar in his background where he's, you know, referencing it all the time or talking about, you know, tonight we dine in Sharanagar, that kind of stuff, I think brings some interesting flavor to a PC as much as anything. And I think that's worth noting, that you can get inspiration as a DM or as a player from books like this.
Yes, absolutely.
And then my bit of inspiration is that I wanted to go a little bit more crunchy and be a little more, you know, specific. I've been very high-minded with my last one, right? Ranging all over the place. So this time I created an encounter using a monster that inspired me in this book, specifically the Banesworn. The Banesworn are, you know, the best warriors of Bane's army, so to speak. you know, and Bane being the god of war and tyranny, all that kind of stuff, you would expect to have some pretty good warriors. So I created an encounter using them quite heavily. Now, I know the general advice is if you want a quick encounter, don't use a lot of soldiers in your encounters. But this idea sort of stuck out to me, and I said, you know what, the levels are just about right. I'm going to go ahead, and it sounds interesting, I'm going to go ahead and make this anyway despite the advice and see how it goes. The concept is this. The PCs encounter a handful of Bane's followers, a couple of guards, and a summoning priest that the guards are there to protect. The priest is realistically not even really a monster in this fight. He's more of an effect, an environmental thing, and he's bringing other things into the fight. The initial crew are lower level, you know, levels 8 or 9, so it seems like it's going to be a real easy fight for my low to mid Paragon tier party. But each round, the summoning priest brings in a new type of Banesworn, starting with some Banesworn warriors, just to keep the party busy so that the summoner has time to bring in other things like a Banesworn war priest, and then maybe some more warriors, and then a juggernaut of the Black Hand, which is the one that's really going out and tearing things up. And then finally it brings in the Iron Bulwark before it all starts over again. So the party has to quickly learn that this relatively weak priest is the real target of the encounter. Otherwise, you're going to be overwhelmed by the army of Bane himself. You know, and you bring in a lot of creatures there that are soldiers that are designed to protect the summoner, so that works out fairly well. And so the party has to figure out how to be creative and get around all those soldiers and maybe make some sacrifices or take some extra hits in order to get over to the priest, to the summoner, so that the big guns don't start showing up and really tearing them in half. So that was my bit of inspiration of how to use the Banesworn in an interesting encounter. Any last thoughts on Plane Above?
Use the book for inspiration. Combine it with information from other books, and I think they give you enough space to kind of run with. So enjoy it.
Cool. And to summarize, I think we all basically said that, well, at least two of us liked both of the books, and Jeffrey Wynn liked Plane Below and was a little more disappointed in Plane Above, if I'm remembering.
I was a bit unfair about Plane Above, probably, but yeah, I found it. I wasn't as sure. Impressed by it as I was Plane Below.
Sure, and I think that's fair. I think I had a similar sort of gut reaction to it as well. I liked Plane Below more than I liked Plane Above. And I think the main criticism we had is that we wanted more. You know, maybe take the Abyss and take the Hell sections and give them their own book and give us more of all the other stuff. And I think that was maybe our main criticism of both books, is that we wanted more of whatever was presented. And that's always, you know...
Which is good criticism to have.
You know, if that's your big critique, is that you want more of it, then what's there must be pretty decent. Does that summarize what we're talking about, what we said pretty well?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
That sounds perfect.
Okay, good. And I know when they do pull out a section of this and give us another book just on the Abyss or Hell, I'm sure I'll be out and buy that as well. In fact, I plan to when Demonomicon comes out in July. All right. This has been episode 134. I want to thank our sponsors for the episode, FRP Games. Be sure to check them out through our website. And I also want to thank our guests for the episode, for returning to the show and helping me test out this new format for reviews. Let me know how it went. I know Mr. James over there is easy to find over at loremaster.com. Do you have anything else you want to promote or pimp while you're on?
Yeah, it's loremaster.org.
Org. I knew it when I said it too.
It's okay. Other than that, check out the Demonomicon. My brother Brian R. James is one of the contributors to that. Keep an eye out for ongoing DDI articles that I have coming out at wizards.com. And I have some future releases coming out next summer. So keep an eye out for some of my first print products.
Cool. And, of course, there'll be another half dozen DDI articles inspired by this episode.
Oh, absolutely. And I will be sure to mention the Tome Show.
Sweet. Every chance you get. And, Jeff, what have you been working on? Where else can people find things that you've got going on?
I guess if you're living in the eastern Pennsylvania area, you can come play RPGA events, D&D encounters, and Living Forgotten Realms at the Portal in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. My email address is gdwinn@comcast.net.
Sweet. And, of course, you can also email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com or visit the forums at vorpalnetwork.com. You be sure to get out there and review the show on iTunes and tell people about it. That helps spread the word, and that helps the show grow. And don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on the show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 134, wherein Mr. Wynn and Mr. James have helped me survive the ravages of the floating sea of burning ice, only to find myself lost in the realms of the gods, as we looked at Plane Below and Plane Above here on
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.